I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Today's discussion concerns women operating in sectors of business which one would typically characterize as being male-orientated industries. We will address the progress and challenges that women experience and what is being done to overcome these issues. Joining us in studio is Mrs. Kile Kwenana from the South African Women in Construction and Mrs. Nora Fakunde. And I will give a brief introduction to you. Mrs. Kile Kwenana is an entrepreneur. She previously worked with SAA in the corporate world. And after leaving SAA, she founded Intando Tando General Trading and Services in 2006, which is a company that she owns and manages. And over the years, this has been evolved to a fully-fledged construction and consulting company whose core services are in general building, civil works, renovations, maintenance, and project management services. Additionally, she is the CEO of Kudu Technologies and Lekile Consulting. She is the chairperson of South African Women in Construction for the Gauteng province and a board member and interim national president of South African Women in Construction, where she spends her time mentoring other women and youth in the business. She has also served as a member of the working committee, which was instrumental in the relaunching of the Black Business Council, and currently continues to serve in the Infrastructure and Economic Transformation subcommittees. She is also Treasurer General of the Black Business Council in Build Environment. And in her spare time, she enjoys spending time with her family and friends, reading, playing golf, and jogging. Very industrious. Mrs. Nora Fakunde is a mother of four girls, and I think that is a particularly significant element given the topic of our conversation today. She is a teacher by profession, and she started Bokgleba Wheels, a company which does manufacturing, refurbishing, and maintenance of the military fleet in 1997. She was appointed to Middelburg and Palabora and also does tenders. She came into Buscor in 1998 as a director and minor shareholder, where she began to aggressively start training female bus drivers, and today 10% of trained bus drivers are women. Additionally, she decided to rebuild the Daisy Zena Plaza 5 years ago, and building completed in 2014 May. And interestingly, is the agreement that she had with her contractor that 40% of the workers who were doing the work there were women, which I think is another significant accomplishment. Welcome to the show. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gonyas-Malka. It is a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be part of your show.
And Mrs. Fakunde, I must just say to you that I first saw you when I did a panel interview on Women's Day in 2013, and I thought you were an exceptional inspiration and really remarkable in terms of the work that you've done on a rural level for women's empowerment. So welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be part of your show, and greetings to the listeners.
To start off with, construction as well as the transport sectors of industry are generally regarded as male-dominated industries, but they account for a significant level of our GDP and output. I believe, according to the latest statistics in South Africa, construction accounts for 3% of annual GDP, and transport, storage, and communication account for 9.1% of GDP. However, if we start to look at the dynamics of women employed in those various sectors, I noted that in the construction sector, only 11% of the people employed in that industry are women. And likewise, in the transportation sector, it's also exceptionally low at only 20%. If you could please expand on what your thoughts are on the business, Mrs. Kwenana.
Actually, it's a very, very sad part of a good story to tell, because by the look of things, looking at our country and where we're coming from 20 years down the line after our democracy, 11% of women being only the percentage that has been employed in the construction industry, that has got a budget of over a trillion rands that needs to be spent for infrastructure development.
On an annual basis?
No, it was done over a period of 3 years, I think, and now we are on our second, if not our third year, sorry. It's a very, very sad state of affairs, if one may put it that way. But there's a lot of factors that have got to do with that, you know, because now when we're talking employment, I'm not too sure whether we're talking employment in terms of people that have got jobs, or are we talking employment and the business opportunities as well, because those are two different. If you're looking at your CIPC registration, in fact, there's a lot of companies that have been registered on their database as trading in construction. If you're looking at the Construction Industry Development Board for the contractors database, you'll find that there's more than 10,000 registrations that are there, and about 80% of those are women-owned entities. However, if you now zoom further down to see the impact of these women-owned companies within the economy itself, then it's a different ballgame altogether.
So we've got a difference between merely registering and actual implementation and being participants in the work environment.
Definitely. Registration will give you all those big numbers that will tell you that, you know what, women have been given an opportunity now to register. But however, if you're talking at now the rands and cents of how much money or how much of the revenue goes to those women, it's a different ballgame altogether.
And Mrs. Fakunde, in your experience in the transport section, do you see a similar picture emerging?
A similar picture is emerging, but I operate in a slightly different environment where it's mainly the service that was rendered by men, and there are no statistics because you have to empower the women that are close to you. Especially because I am from a rural area and I just focused especially on rural women understanding the environment behind. Hence, I take rural girls, raw as they are, train them only as service providers, drivers, mechanics, because that's all I can offer. And as you rightly said, 10% of our drivers now are women, which is 70 women who nobody ever thought that a woman can drive a train bus. And one, with the training that we brought in, the mechanics as well as electricians. However, some have gone out and are participating in the trucking industry where you buy a truck and bring it in and operate as a business person. However, it's not much business, independent business people, entrepreneurs that one has created, no.
Are you finding that you've almost become a training ground because you are contributing, you're empowering young rural women to become bus drivers or mechanics and going into industries which they possibly hadn't considered when they were growing up? And are you finding that your staff are moving on to other organizations nationally and moving away from their roots?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Because, Busco became an eye-opener for other bus operators as well as truck owners that women can drive and they drive better.
So women are better drivers?
They are much better drivers, very responsible, and it's people you can trust because they are not moving around a lot. And as well, they do their work with dedication and commitment because they've got families to take care of. Especially the ones from the rural areas, they appreciate the fact that they've got a job and can go out and look. But other companies have now realized that women are better drivers and better taxi workers. I train in these still. At some point I had about 150 women training drivers, but the numbers are dwindling because it's now a ground that people know they can. And I want to say that we don't just train them to be drivers, we train them to be professional drivers as well. And I must say from the pool of 200 professional drivers that I have, 31 are female. So we are getting there, even though they get stolen by other companies. And I am happy for that because they recruit them at a price, at a premium, pay them slightly more for them to leave Busco in order to be part of their staff, and I'm happy about that.
But Busco stays at the core of their roots.
Yes.
And I'm sure that the memory of their time with you will be something which is etched with them for the rest of their careers.
Oh, absolutely. Some I meet and I can't even remember their faces. There's two ladies who are now trained drivers, and they were trained driving at Busco. And some are in trucks, and they are moving up the ladder.
I think it's an incredible legacy. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Chaka Chaka, the United Nations Goodwill Ambassador on Malaria in Africa. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence.
If you have just tuned in, we're talking about women in the construction and transport industries with Mrs. Fukude from Busco and Mrs. Kwenana from South African Women in Construction. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Ms. Kwenana, you're on a different side, but we're still looking at things as a gender point of view.
Yeah.
What made you go into the construction sector?
The first time I decided to go into the construction sector, it was from the basis of me wanting to participate in the property space. The dream, you know, I was still quite young at that time, was to own buildings, you know, and rent them out or buy them and sell them. But then unfortunately that particular time I didn't have enough money or capital to be able to do that. And
yes, it's a considerable investment.
Yes, yes, definitely. So a friend of mine actually advised me to look into construction first, which made business sense. Because on the other hand, if you are going to be trading in that space, you need to understand the building for that matter. So construction was going to provide me with that basis of understanding what a good building looks like or a building that is worth the investment looks like. And that's how I decided to go into construction. However,
and were you on sort of retail, consumer housing, or are we talking about shopping centres and high-rise buildings?
Now, at that time, I was not in the space at all. So I didn't even know that there's a difference between your retail, your shopping, your office park and whatever. I just wanted to buy a building and own it and make money out of it. That was the whole intention. But given the challenges that are there, remember, firstly, the construction industry is not your sexy type kind of an industry. It's not very girlish, if I may put it that way, because even today with my two daughters, they will tell me, Ma, you've got to have lost your mind. There is no way that they're going to go into construction.
So they're not going into the family business.
They say they're not going to go, but they have to go there because this is a legacy that I'm building for them, you know. However, there are other professionals that are there within the construction industry. It's just that they don't look at the actual being a contractor as a kind of a job that is sexy, because that means you need to put on your PPE, which is your overalls, and sometimes you come back home, you're full of mud because you've been working on site, so which is not very, very appealing to the young
not girls. Glamorous.
Not at all. But to get back to your question again, when I was a student in the 80s, it was during that time when girls were told what studies to go for, you know, even beyond your matric. And I was disheartened by, unfortunately, the circumstances that one grew up under, where my dad could not afford to pay for me to become a medical doctor because that was my aspiration. So sitting there, not having money to go to school and holding an exemption in my hand, and I'd work very hard for it, I was very disheartened because the boys that got even lesser or bad symbols than what I got managed to get their apprentices with companies like your ISCO and all of that, where they were going to be trained as the artisans, but I could not get through because I was a girl. So
purely on gender?
Purely on gender.
Nothing about your competency, it was just gender?
Nothing about my grades, just purely because I was a girl child. I could not go. So when the opportunity for construction came through, I thought this is my time now to settle the score and prove to myself and to the world that I can do anything and everything, not just because I'm a woman, I'm limited.
I think that's a wonderful story. Very passionate.
Thank you. And I've never looked back. I'm enjoying myself every day in this industry. With all the challenges that are there that I'm going to go through, I hope, later in the show. But also to mention that there is a very good story to tell when it comes to the participation of women in the construction industry. The willingness of the government, you know, to make sure that they recognize the fact that women had been biasly excluded in the old system than we are now. So there's a lot of policies that have been developed in terms of transformation. Like, for instance, we've got our triple BEE, and then we've got our gender policies as well. The constitution of the country is also in support of making sure that people are participating equally in the economy of the country without necessarily being excluded because of their gender and race. The willingness of also some of the officials within the public sector and the state-owned enterprises, like, for instance, you've got companies like PRASA that have got a program that's dedicated to women. You know, PRASA has put aside about 1 billion rands for the next 5 years to make sure that women are not only going into classes for training to develop their businesses, but they're also getting an opportunity to participate in your rail industry, you know, from your rail engineering to the construction and property management to ICT as well, which is a very, very good investment and a deliberate effort that has been done by government.
Could you just clarify the acronym for PRASA?
PRASA is P-R-A-S-A. It's Passenger Rail something of South Africa. But it's responsible for your Metro Rails, your Autopex, your Shalosa Mail, and I don't know which other subsidiary that they have. Interside? Yes, it's Interside.
Okay, yes. So the transport area.
Yes.
And Mrs. Fukunda, if you could come in at this point and just elaborate on how you came into the transport industry. What your experiences were?
When I came into Busco, it was in 1998. But before Busco, I started a company, Bohlabela Wheels, which manufactures and refurbish military vehicles. And initially, I was manufacturing washers while applying for accreditation by ARMSCO and BAE Systems. And it was a white male-dominated industry, and I was written off even before I started. My opponent here in Nelson gave me 3 months to survive in the industry. A lot of things happened to pull me down, but I stuck by my commitment to enter the military industry, and that's when I was granted a small contract to build load bodies for Samuel 20 trucks, and I never looked back because thereafter I tendered for big contracts like the gun tractor, got it and finished it in time. But then I started growing. I was appointed to support Middleburg for VRP, Palabora, 7SI, as well as Special Forces.
But at the beginning, making your mark of proving your worth, showing that you could do it, and having examples that were tangible, and then that has been sort of the catalyst that has grown the rest of your business ventures.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I didn't stop there because I felt I was looked down upon because I'm a woman. And I started training the ladies that came in as secretaries, be in charge, go under a truck, look at the faults and look at what the men are doing on those trucks and submit a good product. And they succeeded in that. They are running the two plants right now. And then I was appointed director at Busco with a small shareholding of 24%. I grew the company, and today I am at the helm of the company, the 44.5% shareholding. This is the first bus company in South Africa to be RTMS accredited, which is RTMS's equivalent to the Bureau of Standards. And this is Busco, and we are a leader in our in our industry. I think the average age of our fleet is 4.5. You can't get that in Africa. And it's because safety is my priority, and our passengers are mainly rural, and It is my commitment that rural people also deserve the best, and it is the best that I'm giving them.
Congratulations on your work. I think you're doing an astounding effort for society. Thank you for talking about your personal experiences as you started in your respective industries. And I think reflecting back now, we can see how much transformation has happened within South African society, and also in particular for women. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, an ambassador for the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
If you have just tuned in, we are talking about women in the construction and transport industries with Mrs. Fukude from Buscor and Mrs. Kwenana from South African Women in Construction. I'd like us to talk more now about the challenges that women still experience. Mrs. Kwenana, if you could highlight some of those areas that you've encountered.
Unfortunately, you'll find that there's a lot of commonality between what Mrs. Faguta has noted and what we're going through, because the issue here is the gender stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Before you can even be assessed on your capacity and your ability and your competence, the fact that you're showing up as a woman is a problem. And I still have men, even today, that will still say, woman? Construction? What is that all about? You know, so you've got to prove yourself triple times. And remembering that first, especially as a black woman in this case, I need to catch up with the black men before I can even catch up with the white counterparts that are already established.
So we've got patriarchy and cultural influences that you deal with those complexities as well.
Definitely. You've got to deal with those first. And then secondly, you go to say, okay, fine, now I'm supposed to be functioning under an environment that is conducive and enabling. You know, because we've got the policy that I've mentioned earlier on. Then you get to now the people that are supposed to be implementing, and there is hiccups again at the end of the day. So every single time, you've got to know your story, you've got to know your policy, so that when you go and you approach your government officials for opportunities, in my case especially, because I'm sitting at the helm of the South African Women in Construction, which is an organization that has been put together by women to say, guys, I cannot do it on my own, but we need to have a voice out there as women that are in construction in terms of the capacity needs that we have, because obviously, given the history, there is no way that we can say we're on the same playing field with our male counterparts. Therefore, we need an extra kind of capacity building to be forwarded or afforded to the women. So hence the formation of South African Women in Construction. But you'll find that when you go and approach people to say, okay, you guys have put aside in your budget, or you've announced that you've got 30% as part of your policy in terms of your expenditure that is set aside for women. Which women have you empowered, or what is your game plan?
Half is the this time? The budget where you were talking earlier about the trillion rand over 3 years awarded to construction, and there is a specific portion of that that should go towards women?
The government policies speak to the upping of women to become a 50-50 basis.
Yes.
You know, but this is now on the employment equity. But now we're talking about the business opportunities now. At least we are in agreement with government that at least we start off by 30% and begin to increase it. So it's a policy that is there within government that 30% of their annual expenditure on every department has got to be set aside for women-owned entities. Now, you find that in most cases, this entire budget is put aside, but spend on your soft skills. Like, for instance, they will tell you, no, our report says we've met our target, and then we've had 50 women that are in catering, and some of them have provided us with flowers, and blah, blah, blah. But when you come to the core issues now of saying, in construction, how much of these women have been given opportunities, then you find that that is where the gap is.
So they're trying to meet the targets any way that they can,
exactly,
and trying to fill the easier positions, those low-skilled environments,
exactly,
as opposed to
because
the
there isn't
the
that function. Much good confidence. But I must still say on the same breath that there are certain individuals that have been transformed in their minds and that have learned to accept the fact that women are actually even better builders than men. Because if you're looking at the housing sector, I'm sure you've seen in the past few years where houses had to be ratified. And if you're looking at the list of contractors there, they're mostly men. But up to today, if you go to any house that has been built by a woman, you'll find that house is standing. Because with women, it's not just about building a structure. When you're putting up that structure, you are thinking there is going to be a woman staying in this house with her kids. So if it's cold, you've not put that roof properly. This woman's going to be experiencing cold. If it rains, if that roof is leaking, it is this woman that's going to suffer. So at the end of the day, whatever structure that you put with that at the back of your mind, and making sure that because of the femininity in us as well, the houses that have been built by women have got that final finesse in terms of, we call it the lipstick and makeup, that makes the house to become beautiful, because you can finish it with painting, even if painting was not catered for in your bill of quantities. You put curtains because you're thinking, if this person cannot afford to have curtains and this is the house that I've built for them, I might as well just buy them curtains. So I think there is some paradigm shift based on the experience, but it has taken 20 years too long.
And I think what you're mentioning here is another element that Mrs. Fukunda raised in terms of the dynamic that women bring into their work, the care that they bring, the social components, because they're a woman, they're a mother, they care about their children.
And they care about the community. Remember, the saying that goes, if you empower women, you're empowering the nation, is not just a say, it comes from somewhere. I'll tell you now, because we've got a project that we're doing in South African Women in Construction in Bronkhorstspruit. And the proposal that we have put forward to government was not only speaking to the empowerment of the women that are in South African Women in Construction, but it was also speaking about the local economic development. Because if you go to those rural areas, in this case, it's even a peri-urban area because it's within the Gauteng province, you'll find that there is so much poverty. You know, your girl children are there as single, as parents for that matter, as early as 15 years of age. Why? Because the parents have died of your HIV-related diseases. So these kids end up with your child-headed kind of families, and that's the end of the future for the girl child there. So we are trying to make sure that those girls are involved within the construction sector so that they can be able to not only develop their skills and get an opportunity to go to varsity so that they can get formal training and formal qualification in the construction space. Some of these children are so brilliant. You know, you sit there, you cry yourself to tears, and you think to yourself, oh God, not 20 years after our democracy. Only if we could come to these places and make sure that we do things properly. You find that within the same proposal, you get to be contracted for one thing. Like, for instance, in our case, we're supposed to be doing the pit toilets and then and the houses. But already, we are thinking ahead as women. We're thinking, no. Let us think of bulk infrastructure. So we're currently communicating with government to make sure that there's bulk infrastructure. After we've built these houses, these people can be able to have a toilet that flushes. They can be able to get water as close.
So you have a long-term perspective and a strategy which will empower people
that encompasses
down
all.
The line.
Exactly.
And it's not a short fix situation.
No.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Balka every week on this day at this time.
If you have just tuned in, we are talking about women in the construction and transport industries with Mrs. Fukude from Buscor and Mrs. Kwanana from South African Women in Construction. Mrs. Fukunde, I was wondering, we've got South African Women in Construction as a body which lobbies for women within the construction sector. Is there a similar institution for transport and women in transport?
There is a similar institution, even though, you know, the bus industry especially, that is a difficult area to enter. They are trying to come in, but because of the capital that is needed, your penetration is a bit slow, but the industry bus, you know, women in bus operations are there, they are part of SABOA. You were addressing the question of difficulties that we encounter as women. You know, I was a teacher by mistake because my parents wanted me a teacher. And when I left teaching to go and teach people to do better their handwork in order to have a market, my parents were very angry with me. And secondly, when I wanted to buy Dyzenza because I needed to take care of the people that were depending on Dyzenza, my husband divorced me, left me with the three small children. And I carried on because I wanted to make success. I was beginning to be afraid to fail. And when I entered the bus operations, I think then I was still the only woman in the industry. And you get people saying, not even recognizing that you are part of this company. Even at Dyzenza, when I was still running the place, you would get a person looking for the boss, the owner of the place. When you say it's me, they said, we want the owner, not the cleaner or the seller. So those were the some of the challenges that I had. But when I entered the military industry, that was worse, because even articles were flying to just discredit you, discourage you from continuing, and that's when I really got focused. But with me, my focus was to make sure that the rural woman is not remaining as a rural woman without a job waiting for the husband who's in Johannesburg to send food. Hence,
rural woman, so often she is ignored, and yet she accounts for, I think, approximately 50% of the South African population.
Absolutely. And she takes care of the children, takes care of the family. This man comes once a year. Hence, you heard that I built the center at Dyzenza because I still have those rural women at heart. Even the pensioners now don't have to travel to go and get their pensions. The center is now serving them. I brought the shopping center closer to them instead of them traveling to towns to look for help. So even when I started there, there were men who were refusing with the land and all sorts of things. That's why it took me 5 years to get the approvals, but I decided I was going to do it. And they laughed at myself when I said opening the center, the traders, the tenants were making money and I wasn't making any penny because I don't have a shop. But for the mere fact that our people have shops close to them and they've got jobs, I am happy.
It's so important for the social aspect. I think from what both of you have said, that women have to work three times as hard. Yes. They have to have more ambition. They have to have a tenacity and perseverance to defy the odds.
If I may, Doctor, another burning issue or one of the things that I see as bottleneck is the issue of funding. If you've heard Ms. Fakude, she mentioned how difficult it is. So imagine if you're supposed to start a contract, even awarded a contract, and you go to your bank and your bank will be requiring this, then they can only approve you after 48, not even 48 months if you are lucky, depending on the size of the project. You find that you get to be sent from pillar to post, you know, at the end of the day. The project is started, you've got your letter of award, you're supposed to start working on site, and then they tell you, no, bring this, you bring that, bring that, you bring that. And worse now is that when they want collateral. Especially in the olden days, remember, most women, even if you were married in community of property, the title deed only had your husband's name. Now, where do you find collateral under those circumstances? You know, so you'd find that at the end of the day, you become too much a high risk for any bank to associate with you. So already your project is delaying and you'll be getting those intimidating.
And you have penalties as well when you don't.
So at the end of the day, you find that the project fails before it even starts because of lack of funding. You know, on the other hand, for funding for the skills training and development again for the women that I'm talking about that have come together to say, guys, please help us. I'm not too sure whether men counterparts are afraid that if they keep on funding, women are going to go up with knowledge and skills and become so capacitated that they can take over. And yes, that is a possibility. But the nice part is that once you've empowered those women, you are sure of loyalty.
Absolutely.
Women are not the ones that are going to up and go and work in Dhaka or go and work in God knows where. We are loyal to the South Africa. So the rand will still remain within South Africa and grow this economy, because we've got more responsibility than men may have at the end of the day as people that are indignant of South Africa. So my appeal would also be there in the people that are in the space, corporates that have got money that can assist with funding and training, to make sure that programs such as your South African Women in Construction programs, like the ones that Mrs. Fakunde is busy with to develop and empower women, are properly structured, one, and secondly, they are properly funded, because without money, it's very difficult for you to be able to push these programs and get the achievement. Because remember, some of the people that are coming from the ranks of the training and development are going back to the very same open market, and they can compete and they can be trained, you know, and they can be absorbed into the economy by getting opportunities to do the jobs. So in some cases, that is even worse, is when a girl child is placed in a company, maybe as an apprentice or as an internship student, and they don't get an opportunity to do what they've been trained for. Like, for instance, you've got a child that has come through the FET college or come through the university, but now they need that experiential learning. So you've got the whole person who's supposed to be a quantity surveyor that is being sent to go and make copies and go and buy Nando's, you know. The whole project manager that is supposed to be working on site and see how things are being done, being sitting in the office and making teas for the boss. So I always say, you know, the road is still long, but because we are women, we've got that tenacity. Because we are women, we are hard as rock. We will keep on pushing until we get this thing right. But South Africa will be correct, and South Africa will be built by women that are South African.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band.